Hello and welcome to the Undercut Podcast. I'm your host this evening, Jesse Billington, and we're back to review the 19th round of the 2025 Formula One season. Is it the 19th round? Got Brazil,
yes.
Vegas, Qatar.
We have four rounds.
Which is four. No. 24, 23, 22, 21. This is the
20th. How many races do we have this year?
24. This is the 20th round of the 2025 Formula One season, the Mexico City Grand Prix. To do this, I'm joined by the man that typed out the notes incorrectly at the start of this, Mr. Timo Albers Daly. How are you?
In my defense, I did these all over the summer break, and there was going to be at least one typo somewhere, so I'm just glad we got as far as Mexico before we noticed anything was wrong. And yet more proof that you will read whatever is in front of you. So we both have a bit of fun here on this professional podcast. I'm very, very good otherwise. How are you?
I'm doing all right. What have I done this weekend? Rugby League Ashes down in London. England lost horribly to Australia, so not looking forward to the second and third tests in that. Otherwise, yeah, pretty straightforward, really. Enjoyed the Mexico City Grand Prix. Some good racing action from Mexico. Every now and then, it just chucks out a race where you go, ooh, this was exciting.
Yeah, we had Austin be this Grand Prix where we had a lot to talk about, but not an awful lot happened. It felt like on track, at least. It was more the results were interesting. And then Mexico went a bit too hard in the other direction in terms of we've got a lot to talk about and we're not happy about a lot of it because a lot of it feels like stuff that we shouldn't have to talk about. And yet here we are, and we do then have some actual interesting and fun elements woven within all of that.
Yeah, there's a lot to pick in a few certain places. I think a few of the teams will be able to breeze through, but a few bits we've still got to discuss. We'll kick off with some news that's merged in sort of the week over the weekend. And the first is that McLaren have reportedly broken the cost cap for 2024. They are under investigation for these infringements. At the moment, there have been, I think, two teams that have been sort of flagged, or there is public awareness that they've been flagged for potential infringements. At the moment, none of this has been properly sort of concrete and sealed, so we'll wait and see what happens, but just something to sort of put out there just so we're aware of it ahead of time. I think
the other interesting thing with regards to any breach of any of these sorts of things, and since they've come in, is that even if they did, we're not really going to see any potentially major repercussions come as a result of this. So it won't make much difference. And even if we do see any major repercussions, we might not even notice it until 2027 at the earliest, because it's 2024, it gets investigated in 2025. By the time they've noticed anything is up, 2026, they've already done a lot of work to. And then you'd only start noticing any hampering or punishment, say it's wind tunnel time, for example, for when they start developing 27's car next year. So it takes about 3 years for you to even get the punishment for anything like this. We saw this with Red Bull before. We were wondering when the knock-on effect would take place for, what was it, 2022 cost cap? And we were looking at 23 and going, I'm not seeing anything wrong here with Red Bull. And then midway through 2024, you go, okay, I may be seeing this now, but that could also just be because Adrian Newey left. I'm not 100% sure. So it's a curious whole system.
It's an interesting one, and yeah, it's, you always wonder what the impact of like the ramifications are of either overspending or when they're punished for overspending, and it's tricky to try and pick apart where those infringements sort of come into play, either for overspending or otherwise. So we'll see. It's all still up in the air. We'll wait and see what the concrete sort of line is, but these are the sort of the early words leak from the people sorting through all the financial paperwork. The more concrete thing, though, is that Sergio Perez is to test the SF23 at Imola next month ahead of his return to Formula One. And this is another good sign of Cadillac really putting in the hard yards to make sure they've got everything up and running. And obviously Cadillac have got Ferrari as an engine supplier next year, so it makes sense that he ends up with in a Ferrari car, just a chance to get used to the powertrain, get used to the control settings for it, get used to a bit of how it feels. Obviously we've got new engines going into 2026 anyway, but just a chance to get used to quite what he's going to be handling. And also he's been sat on the sidelines for a year. It's a chance for him to get back in an F1 car and physically back up to speed. So this is Cadillac making some useful and intelligent plays early on.
I just know that the day it happens, most people waking up to see the images of him in a Ferrari, in a Ferrari racing, will have forgotten all about this taking place. And so go, what on earth have I woken up to? Am I still dreaming? What is this what-if scenario that suddenly materialized? And then panic over, oh yes, I remember this is the test that the Cadillac were doing to get it back up to speed again. I don't have to worry about what on earth is going on at Ferrari now.
It's going to be an interesting one, and I think that the thing we're going to first see about this is possibly going to be an SF23 in bits and pieces at the side of the circuit in Imola, but wait to be proven wrong.
I didn't want to be the first one to say it.
I think we're all leaning towards it. Meanwhile, when it comes to cars getting crashed and smashed, we ought to turn our attention to the Junior Formula and Formula 2 and Formula 3, where there is driver news. For Formula 2, Nicolas Varone joins VAR for the 2026 season. And he is an interesting signing because this is a man that has won Le Mans twice, once in 23 with Corvette Racing in a C8R, and again in 2024 in the AF Corsa Arayka 7 chassis in the LMP2 class. So this is a man who's got some wheel talent, and we even ran in the Proton Competition hypercar this season as well. So he's decent behind the wheel and is now appearing in Formula 2.
Yeah, we appear to be having a bit of a crossover episode event for Formula 2 next year in terms of you've done various things that aren't single seater, come on in, or you've been in much higher series, come on in, and let's just put you all to the test in some kind of interesting gladiatorial match. As you say, he's principally an endurance racer, so to see him in single seater racing for the first time, I believe, will be very interesting. I thought the name was familiar, so when I was having a look, I did my research and realized I'd interviewed him back in 2022, not long after he got a pole position at Watkins Glen. So he's been on a bit of a journey since then, and like you say, not only gone to win Le Mans a couple of times in the World Championship, but he's also then had a bit of a tricky time the rest of the time. So he's got pedigree, but not all of the time, and that's going to be interesting to see how that transfers over. Because when he's good, he appears to be pretty good. When he's not, and that could be a very interesting way of watching a Formula 2 season unfold for yourself. Like, and to be fair, with a championship as already kind of competitive looking as it's going to be next year, having a driver that could be hot 1 minute, cold the next, might not be a championship contender, but could really spice things up for the drivers that are and go, oh, I wanted that race win, and this guy's come out of nowhere and taken it from me. That's really inconvenient.
And we don't know who his teammate's going to be at Van Amersfoort Racing just yet. We've still got a lot of open seats when it comes to Formula 2. In fact, we've got several teams that haven't confirmed a damn thing yet. So we're interested to see what Trident, ART, Prema, and MP pull out. Obviously, we announced in our preview of the Mexico City Grand Prix that we had Colton Herta signed for Hi-Tech. Dino Baganovic is over at Dams. Martinez Stenshorn at Rodim. And we've obviously got Dirksen now at Invicta as well. Well, we've got Fittipaldi Jr. and Kian Shields at, off the top of my head, they are signed with
AIX.
AIX, correct. But when it comes to Formula 3, it is a very different state of affairs for their 2026 calendar, where there is just three seats remaining. Dams have yet to confirm their remaining two gaps, and ART have got one left. But it is that Dams sort of team that's the most interesting one, because they've got the latest signing, Timo.
Yeah, they have a brand new Thai driver by the name of Nanvabud Birumbanaki. And yeah, an interesting signing, like you say, Thai driver, graduated from karting in 2022. Achieved his first podium in single seaters the following season on his debut in the Formula 4 Czech Championship. But he did only compete in two races that season. So good for him while he was there, but then just disappeared off the face of the earth for the rest of the year. He has competed in two seasons of the Formula Regional European Championship by Alpine. And interestingly worded in the F3 press release, achieved several point finishes in 2025. So, yeah, we'd be interested to see how he's justifying his position on the Formula 3 grid for next year. We were talking before we hit record about how drivers are chosen in Formula 3 and how sometimes a driver doesn't look that remarkable on paper and then somehow manages to turn it around and makes us all look a bit silly. And then other times we've got drivers that don't look great on paper and prove to not be that great. So Formula 3 is, it's a challenge for anyone getting in there. And I suppose when you've got so many worthy drivers, when you see one that there's a few question marks over potentially, you immediately jump on them because you do wonder what someone else has seen and you maybe haven't, and how long will it be in the 2026 season before we do see that, if at all?
it's going to be an interesting one because we've had to eat humble pie a couple of times before where we've sort of been disparaging, let's say, about drivers that have merged into Formula 3 and sort of moved up to Formula 2. And
Well, the amount of questioning is what we've had.
yeah, we have put the sort of decisions of Formula 2 and Formula 3 teams under the broiler to really sort of put them to the test, and we have learned from those. But I think with Nandverhood, we're gonna see potentially our questioning pay out this time. I just have a hunch.
I'm still and will continue to be annoyed on behalf of Abby Pulling not getting a Formula 3 seat because I don't think that she's going to get one with only 3 seats remaining. And so when I see a driver that hasn't won a championship, hasn't looked like he's been contending for a championship at any point in his single-seater career, going up against someone who finished 10th in GB3 this year, got on the podium, won F1 Academy, did impressive stuff in W Series, I'm going to question why they're not taking the quote unquote risk on someone like Pulling, but they're willing to take the risk on someone like this. And that's nothing against the guy. I've got nothing against him. I just question looking at results as I try and do with everything. I'm a purist. I think you're a purist too when it comes to that sort of thing. And I just want to see people who get good results rewarded.
I think we both know what the possible driver behind this is, and it
Yeah.
starts with M and ends in Unny. And unfortunately, as has been discussed multiple times, that despite the oodles of talent she's got, Abby Pulling just cannot compete when you're a Thai driver coming through and you've potentially got sort of like huge backing. I don't know what sponsors this fella brings with him to Dams Lucas Oil, but Dams, one of the few teams in Formula 2 that has a title sponsor for an outfit, is, or Formula 3 even, has a title sponsor as the outfit outfit. It's a team that's oriented around money, and Formula 3 is not cheap to run in these days. Formula 2, you're looking at well in excess of £1 million to get even close to something half competitive. Formula 3 is going to be still touching on that, and that's before you get to testing days, before you get to anything else. There are going to be bits that you still got to cover, and it's a lot of money to sump up. And
I'm still going to keep highlighting it just to draw the attention, even if we have the same conversation every single time about we know what the reason is probably, but it's worth just re-establishing that point over and over again to go, yeah, maybe the reason your team or your driver isn't doing as well as you'd like is because you're focusing on the wrong qualities that they've got, and it only takes you so far.
well, this is a bit of the discussion that's being had around rugby league and the Ashes at the moment, is the fact that we've picked players that are big name players and the ones that carry a bit of kudos, but that hasn't necessarily translated into performance on pitch. And the phrase that's been used is in the bank. And there's a lot that's sort of translatable, I think, to some of the signings we might have seen in Formula 3 this season. Formula 2, weirdly, gone the other way. They've picked a lot of very interesting talent with some interesting driving abilities, with some interesting pathways coming to it. So we'll see how that pans out. Meanwhile, speaking of Abby Pulling and women drivers, we've got the Formula E women's test still coming up, and we've got Juju Noda and Jamie Chadwick signed on with Jaguar, and Janina Schull will team up with Porsche.
Yeah, I'm really happy to see Juju Noda there if she continues to be one to watch moving forwards. That was a pleasant surprise seeing that announcement. Not surprised at all to see Jamie there. That makes sense. Keep it going. Bring her in. Again, I'm a little bit annoyed. I think I said in the preview to Mexico that the entire grid for next season of Formula E is already sorted because you're having a test with a bunch of drivers that would you'd think all be worthy of a seat. So why do you do all your driver signings already? But here we go. We'll just have to try again on that one. Good to see Janina Schaal there too, because I hadn't heard of her really before, and it gave me the chance to take a look at her background. And last year, she drove at the FIA Motorsport Games in the car endurance category, finished in 10th, made a touring car debut in 23, and continued racing in the V5 class throughout 2024 with the girls only team. They've done a lot of good work as well. She was second place at the Nordschleife and then won later on at the sixth round of the season, I think. And yeah, so it's nice to get another endurance driver in, another kind of name that isn't as big as maybe it should be. Again, we try and keep track of as many drivers as we can, but it is a bit of whack-a-mole, guess who, all at the same time sort of thing. And we do miss a few, unfortunately. So when someone is brought to our attention and we don't know them immediately, it's quite nice to see them getting a chance as well.
It's nice to see those names emerge, get the opportunity, and showcase what they can do. And looking at what Formula E has got signed up for the coming season, there are some interesting drivers there. Obviously, a lot sticking around, a few moving between teams. I think the new ones we've really got Joel Eriksson, I think, is new to this. Pepe Mar moving off from Formula 2 to this. Who else have we got that's really new on the field? Felipe Drugovich, again, new to Formula E. That's about it. It's not a hugely refreshed grid. Taylor Barnard been kicking around in Formula E for about a season now, but we know he's sort of a proven talent. So,
And there's definitely a couple of names on that grid that you'd question how and why, again, without going into a Formula 3 conversation about the significance of their presence there in terms of ability. But I think you're going to have that more or less wherever you go. It's still just frustrating, again, that you'd. I think it's because their season starts so much earlier than other championships as well. They want to get these things locked in. But then I just ask the question of why not have the test sooner? So that you can at least have a more informed decision and maybe make fans or casual fans like myself happy, so that I know that you've at least given the impression that you've gone through the motions and assessed all the options before signing whoever you do sign.
Yeah, I think there's. You look at the bottom of the field and you look at. I don't want to say it because he's a nice guy. Sam Bird, Robin Fries, Norman Nattō.
Well, Sam Bird's not there this year at all because
Yeah,
McLaren left. So, it's one of those things where. Again, like you say with rugby league, the namesake, it's nice. And he's not a bad driver, great guy, and all the rest of it. But even he loses out, and you wonder how he manages to lose out compared to some other drivers on the grid. And it's all just very topsy-turvy, inclined to frustrate.
There's a few that are sort of possibly shuffling towards sort of retirement, and when they move, there'll be some interesting spaces opened up. Anyway, Formula E out of the way, we'll jump into talking about the Mexico City Grand Prix, and
We should probably do that at some point.
we should probably get into that. And we'll kick off with some team by team analysis. McLaren, we'll start with those. We'll start with FP1, where Piastri beat Pato O'Ward in FP1, P4 and P13, respectively. Worth also noting that Pato O'Ward, major gastrointestinal issues going into this weekend. So he's not feeling great. And obviously, still a bit odd that he was getting this call up to the FP1 seat with the ongoing sort of legal issues that McLaren seems to be suffering in IndyCar. Haven't heard about the resolution to that yet. I don't know if it's been resolved.
I don't think it has been resolved yet. I think O'Ward wouldn't have mattered if he was spewing blood on the way to the track. There was no way you were going to keep the Mexican driver out of an orange car at his home race, even if it's just for an FP1 session. So he was going to do it regardless of legal or health situations. I'm not surprised that Piastri beat him, but I've more keeping track of that because 9 out of the 10 teams, I think, had rookies, quote unquote, in their F1 cars and FP1. It was just interesting to see how that lay of the land went then, because it was just such a fun session to watch and see the names there that you're not going to see most of them probably in F1 for more than an FP1 session here or there. So it's always fun when that happens. It was like COTA a couple of years ago. It's fascinating to watch it all unfold.
You get the very jumbled outings. Meanwhile, though, by the end of the Grand Prix, Piastri, having qualified seventh, would go on to finish fifth, and Lando Norris would qualify on pole, and for the first time in quite a while, hang on to P1 through turn one, and pretty much all the way to the end of the Grand Prix. It was a likes to flag sort of win for Rat Norris, and an absolutely astonishing one. Peak performance from this weekend, a stunning drive, monstrous quali lap too. I'd recommend going back and watching that lap of his, because absolutely pounding the curbs to maximize time and utilize that free air once he got off the line, as well as McLaren's decent cooling package to just storm into the distance so far off that he wasn't even considered a challenge for those behind him. He's overhauled Piastri now by a point and takes back the title lead for the first time since going into Saudi Arabia earlier this year. A lot still to play for, though.
Yeah, I think it's one of Lando's best victories and reflects an interesting notion with his ability in the Formula One car for me, because when he dominates, he dominates. You look at Zandvoort last year as a great example of that. But when he's not on pole, he doesn't seem to be as able as Verstappen, Piastri, Leclerc, Hamilton, etc. Coming back through and fighting for a victory. You put Max anywhere, he can fight for a win. You look at Spa in, what, 23? You do the same with Hamilton, Brazil 21, no problem. And it It's interesting how this reflects on the comments he made after Austin about wanting it to be easier. When it's easy, he's great. And I say easy is kind of as easy as Formula One can get, because I realize that you still have to do a massive amount of things with that. So I'm not kind of trying to shit on him there in any way. I'm just saying that obviously, when you are in the best position possible, you don't have to worry about a bunch of other factors, and you can just concentrate on essentially pumping in qualifying lap after qualifying lap and manage tyres and all the rest of it. It's going to be more straightforward. But when it's slightly inconvenient, such as Piastri or Verstappen being in P2 beside him, or 90% of the time going into turn one if he is leading, as you mentioned, it's an entirely different story. And if he doesn't get pole for the remainder of the season, I'll be very interested to see how then that plays out. And I'll want to circle back to this in our maybe post-season review.
It'll be an interesting one to sort of loop back to and decide on whether this was a critical moment or
We
would.
haven't seen him fight a lot, you know. It's kind of when he's out front, he goes and does the thing that you'd hope you'd do in pole. But we saw in Austin, starts second, loses immediately, fights back for the majority, then can't get anywhere near the winner at the end. And we've seen that majority of the rest of the time. When he's out front, perfectly fine. The rest of the time, it's not as easy as he'd like it to be. And that's just a really interesting thing to look at in terms of what does that say about him as a driver and the ability that he has there. Because obviously, like I say, none of you, to a certain extent, are bad Formula One drivers, but the ability is very different read throughout the grid. And you can see what some drivers can do with a car. Look at Verstappen in Red Bull this year, for example, the Norris in a McLaren.
And when you look at, let's say, the other side of that McLaren garage as well, and it's a car that can overtake, that car that can last in dirty air, a car that can find those gaps and make those passes.
And did so this weekend.
It did so this weekend in the same conditions. Piastri had a better weekend of things than he's had recently, but he'll be ruining that late VSC ultimately. His form
Him
was
and everyone else.
His form was better, but we're seeing him start to flag a little. Hopefully, the loss of this lead will fire him back up. Look at his F2 championship. And while he was leading due to consistency to that point, his final two rounds were phenomenally competitive and saw him storm away. Hopefully, he can dig deep into that 2021 and find that pace once more. This weekend was never going to be a strong one for him with those track conditions, with those tyre challenges. He is still getting to grips with what is ultimately a very challenging Pirelli style of tire. It's useless. And the fact that we had a soft that was outlasting mediums this weekend was an added bit to throw into it. So we're seeing Piastri still overcoming a lot of learning challenges as it stands, and still being able to put on a brilliant show when it comes to overtaking, defensive driving, putting pressure on more experienced drivers ahead. Look at the fact that he was sort of having a great ding dong, not necessarily with Ollie Bearman, but also with the pressure he's putting on the safety
Ocon, the
car.
overtake he did on him in what was it, turn 5-6 sort of area where you go, you don't see overtakes happening there very often and being pulled off successfully. Or you've seen a lot of attempts at overtakes by drivers that really should know better but ultimately didn't, and then clatter out off and out of the race. Whereas he just got it perfect and went, no, I'm coming through here.
He
And
got
I
lucky
like the
with the knock
aggressiveness
on
that came
one
through.
because there was a bit of contact to it, a little bit of a tap knock on's back
But I
end.
like that he's taking that risk because he knows that that's the situation he's in where I've got to try everything.
He's
I've got to
fighting.
risk it a little bit.
He's putting it on the line. He knows he needs to fight. He knows he needs to make up those positions to keep that gap as close as possible. It did pay off for him this weekend. The VSC, I think we'll talk about it when we get to a slightly more
Williams.
critical point. Williams and Haas, I think we'll definitely discuss the VSC when we get to them. Meanwhile, back up into second place in the Constructors' Championship, Ferrari. Leclerc beat Fuoco in FP1, P1, and P20, respectively. I think there's a bit of an odd jump for Fuoco to try and make for one session.
I didn't expect much, but I was quite forgot for a moment that I was reading his name after the session. I just saw P20 and I went, bloody hell, I'm to lose. I'm like, oh no, okay, it's good, it's all good. All good. Never mind. It's
P20, see
just
the Ferrari
it's
badge,
the
get that,
rookie.
oh wait, yeah. Ultimately, though, with Hamilton back in the car, he was able to qualify third, one of his best qualifyings of the season, and would finish P8. Leclerc, meanwhile, would qualify second and finish second, doing magical things with that car that saw an end to development before a lot of the other cars on the field as well. Of all the battles, he'll be the one breathing the biggest sigh of relief with that VSC. Lewis had a good outing too, decent pace in qualifying. and bit of a messy opening series of corners, plus a heavy-handed penalty in that battle with Max meant that it was going to be an uphill battle for him for the rest of the weekend. But he's already in 2026, sort of figuratively, and both cars were on lift and coast by about lap 12, so their pa outright pace was hampered hugely.
Yeah, I think he and Alonso from recent comments are, they're still going to turn up, do the best they can with what they've got, but they're both mentally in 2026 and focusing on what they can do there. A 10-second penalty for him was massively harsh, I thought. You combine that with the less than stellar communication of a team radio to him about what the penalty was really for, and it was just a mess of an opportunity all round, considering, like I say, third, the opportunity was there to do something really fun. And at the place where Ferrari got their last victory in Formula One. And you think that would have been a great way to narratively bring that together. Hamilton gets the victory or the podium at least at the place that Sainz won, and Leclerc does a decent job of it as well. It would have been very nice narratively, but the racing gods weren't in favour of that. Verstappen v Hamilton was fun and should have just been left alone, I thought. It's been a while since those two have gone up against each other. It's fun to see Max fighting him in a Ferrari because we've not really seen too much of that, and that's just nice. I want more of it. But yeah, it was one of many questionable steward calls that we've had over the weekend. Not much to say on Leclerc. He qualified obviously really well, and then I think the capabilities of the Ferrari just kept him there. He wasn't going to be able to do much, and he was. Yeah, I think. He was hoping he could maybe do more. I was hoping he could do more, maybe push if they went for a second stop to chase down Norris. But alas, it didn't happen. And like you say, he's going to be quite happy that that VSC came out because otherwise Verstappen would have got him, I think. And that'll be another thing we go to at the end of the season. Look at the points margins between first, second, and third and go, okay, so if he'd got Leclerc here and if Piastri had gotten. Or is it Antonelli here or Behrmann? Then, oh, how would that have changed things? But yeah, frustrating for many a reason. And that's just Ferrari.
It's early to play the what if game. I think the ultimate frustration is the fact that I don't think Charles would have ever caught Norris with that car because it's just so impacted by its cooling system.
The
Most
only thing I was thinking about was there was a point where I think he'd just gotten down to around 20, 21 seconds behind him. And I thought if they hit Norris and they decide to keep Leclerc out, there's a chance at just push to the end, hope for the best, and then that VSC would have been beautiful for him because we wouldn't have minded too much because then we get a Leclerc victory, but then they both just stayed out and you go, oh, never mind that.
It didn't happen with the pit strategy. I don't think Leclerc would have been able to have caught him anyway because that lift and coast. If you look at how much cooling they're running down, even the engine covers, then you factor that into the fact they'll have been running that when it comes to brake duct design. They won't have really been changing any of that greatly across the weekend. There's going to have been a lot of overheating. And again, the Ferrari's never been great on its tyres. It was a very hot weekend. It was such a high UV factor. I think it was factor 10, and it meant that the track surface temperature was absolutely rocketing through the afternoon. It meant that it was an absolute nightmare to try and keep tyres alive. Norris had the advantage here because he had so much clear air for so much of the time that he didn't really have to worry about it, was able to just extend and extend and extend and make that one stop and work. With Ferrari, Charles got lucky that Norris just sodded off into the distance because it gave him that clear air to operate him. 30 seconds up the road, you're not really getting impacted by that. You're not getting impacted by the heat and the dirty air. And it kept his tyres alive long enough. But yeah, even then, I don't think the Ferrari had much more pace in it. Other really, he was lucky that Verstappen was sort of called off the back of him there. Mercedes, Antonelli beat Fred Vesti in FP1, P2, and P14 respectively. Meanwhile, Russell would qualify fourth, Antonelli qualify sixth. Russell would finish seventh with a McLaren wedged firmly up his. It was bleeped out for the television broadcast, and Antonelli would finish where he started, sixth.
Some of these team radio for me, Piastri getting past Russell move was good and fun. I thought it was as if he was somehow watching and listening to the race commentary at the same time as he was racing because it just seemed something where he was so aware of everything else around him. So obviously Russell's having a very colourful time on the team radio about get Antonelli out of the way so I can go and take on Behrmann because I've got Piastri coming up behind me and I'm more than happy to swap back positions with Antonelli if I can't get past Behrmann. And then, nay, 5 seconds after Piastri gets past Russell and goes off after Behrmann, who so hasn't been able to get past. Just this little tiny voice comes on the team radio on Antonelli saying, "So that place, could I have that back, please? Are we doing something about that?" I just thought, did not miss a beat. The comedy timing was perfection, and when Mercedes have put themselves in this situation in the first place, because they should have swapped those cars around much earlier and seen what then Antonelli could do with Piastri while Russell would go and maybe have a more of a decent go at Behrmann. I think it was the comedy, the levity that the situation required there. I'm also just still impressed that Russell couldn't get past Behrmann. To be quite frank, and the only silver lining here is that they've got two strong circuits coming up historically. So maybe that'll be what they focus on in the break instead.
We'll probably talk about it a bit more when we get to the Haas section, but the Haas is a very tricky car to follow because it is so dirty in the air that it produces, which is sort of clever. It's sort of if you watch the F1 movie and they're like, we've made a car for battling. Haas have made a car that you can't follow, and I think that's kind of clever. The problem is they also made a car that couldn't qualify particularly well. So yeah, it sort of you need to be able to qualify really well to have a car that's bad to follow. But anyway, yeah, this is probably the angriest we've seen Russell in a fair while, and for good reason. Antonelli really wasn't making much of an impact on Behrmann ahead, and by the time the pit wall motioned that swap, Russell's rear tires were toast. We saw or heard on the radio.
And his team radio when they did swap us, it was essentially, "Oh, now you do
Yeah,
it."
now
A
you
bit
do it. You
bloody
wait
late.
till I spend sort of 5 to 10 laps defending for the life of me against a faster, far faster McLaren with Piastri fighting his way through, use up all my tires, and then let me go. And then surprised when all of a sudden I cannot go and catch Behrmann. And all of a sudden, the fact that I've been pushing Antonelli along for so long as well, who's been sat in the dirty air of Behrmann, that Antonelli's tires are
I'm
always going to
surprised I
be.
didn't see a meme of Anton Deck with the microphones kind of telling Mercedes strategists what to do as part of one of their Saturday Night Takeaway gimmicks.
And the problem is they left it so late that Piastri was right on top of them when they executed that team order. It was so close watching them do it into
They were
turn.
lucky you didn't get past both of them.
Yeah, I thought that they're just going to give up 2 places here. This is going to be absurd. Overall, though, the pace from both drivers was decent, but tripping over one another to get any more was really silly. And I think Mercedes will have a lot to learn from this and can be happy to have walked away with a double points finish. But
Considering how tight that battle is for P2 in the Constructors' Championship, what is it, 10 points between second and fourth, and they're 1 point between second and third? You can't be risking it like this with Mercedes so much, because that is going to be potentially worth a lot of money come the end of the season. And I know that these teams don't need as much as the other teams do, but still, take the money where you can.
Yeah, Ferrari is ahead of Mercedes by just 1 point as it stands, 356 place, 355, with Red Bull on 346 just behind them. It is very close indeed, and a nice way to link into Red Bull, where Lindblad beats Tsunoda in FP1, the only FP1 driver to do so, P6 and P8 respectively. Meanwhile, when it came to the Grand Prix, Verstappen would qualify 5th, while Tsunoda would qualify 10th, technically 11th with Carlos Sainz's penalty ahead of him. And Verstappen would finish 3rd while Tsunoda would finish 11th. And I think it is important to note that Tsunoda didn't make it into Q3 here. While we say he started the race from P10, this is another time that that second Red Bull car has failed to make it through to the 3rd stage of qualifying.
Yeah, and you add insult to injury there with Åke Lindblad beating FP1. I know he was on a low fuel run at the end to help get the time, but again, a rookie should not be able to comfortably beat the experienced Formula One driver in the same machinery. So it would have been one thing if it was Iwasa beating Hadjar or Lawson in FP1, because yeah, okay, rookie versus slightly more experienced rookie, but this is rookie against 5 years plus now in the sport. So not great for him. Also not great was the strategy for Tsunoda during that race. I have no idea what the plan there was, aside from, "We're probably replacing you for next year, so let's just get some data from you to help Verstappen try and win this championship." The championship he is 36 points away from now,
It's
and
still doable for Verstappen, but I think
it's still very doable.
I've picked apart though what they had for that Tsunoda strategy, and it is quite interesting. I'll get Max out of the way first because he's quite easy. Fascinating performance from him, brilliant launch, and that brief double toe into turn one gave him way too much overspeed when he arrived at the braking zone. Didn't help
He'd
that
watched
Austin won.
Cars the night before, clearly.
Where they also go four wide, he was sat out on the edge, and there is a curb stone on the outside edge of turn one as you approach it, which meant that he lost the front end. So the front end was bouncing around, no brakes, hence the reason why we see him lock up and end up taking to the grass. Did very well to keep it out of the wall. It was tight watching Albon and Ocon dance through that first section there on gripped up tyres. So four drivers on start fresh compounds was
That was
never
a very nice battle. I know we've talked about them later, but that was a very nice
Yeah,
battle.
it was stunning to watch the two of them jousting away at it. Max did very well to keep it off the ball, kept it pointing the right way for a good run through the opening sector, and his battle with Lewis was a little scrappy, and I would have liked to have seen them just left to it more so. However, Tsunoda did prove to be a useful hurdle to Piastri for a number of laps, forcing him to use a lot of his tyre on that charge through. Had they been able to leave Piastri to do a one stopper, this would have been a very different race and a very different championship setting as to where we are. And if you're Red Bull and you're trying to keep at least one of the McLarens to scrapping away,
Well,
keeping
this is where I was thinking
down.
they've just decided we're going to sacrifice you to Max's ability as best as we can here. So, yeah, hold up, Piastri, or do what you can there. And
And
unlike previous times where we've seen drivers get told to hold up that driver and then immediately get overtaken, it
Tsunoda
actually
held him
worked
back
for
for
a little bit.
a good few laps, and while it wasn't exactly a long distance or a long number of laps, what he forced Piastri to do was use up that compound and force McLaren to put him onto that two stopper, and it worked. And from there, also, he was able to open up gaps in the field that provide space for Verstappen to pit back into as well. It's not just a case of the driver you're actively racing, it's where you come out in the field, it's the space you operate in a series where clean air and keeping your tyres alive is so important. Tsunoda being able to basically hold up everyone that comes through just spreads out that midfield, which meant that when it came to Verstappen stop, he was able to, he had a choice of gaps where Red Bull, once they decided what they were doing after accidentally pressing the wrong button, were able to say, this is what we're doing, this is where you'll be boxing, and knowing exactly where you could come out. And it was a great strategy from Hannah Schmitz, who was able to put that one together, put it to the pit wall and go, right, here's what we're doing, and it worked. And ultimately, pointless for Tsunoda because finishing 11th, not great. Essentially finishing where he qualified. And this is a weekend that really hadn't got off to a good foot with him because his Honda RA272 that he'd been demonstrating on Sunday morning also packed up on the showcase lap to celebrate 60 years since Honda's first win in the sport. We were also supposed to find out the Red Bull lineups for the coming season at the end of this GP, and which technically we still will. We'll find out after the Grand Prix, as Helmut Marko said, just a little further down the line, because they said they want to focus a bit more on the constructors, which is still very much on the line for them, and Max's title contention. So we'll see. But
It
given.
does very much smack of you're done, Niki. So here's a nice Honda for you to drive before we ask you to compromise your
He's
weekend.
driven that Honda before. I've seen him in it at
Well,
Christmas.
yeah, that is also the awkward
Yeah.
thing. I was hoping you wouldn't maybe mention that. But I think also the Grand Prix demonstrates why McLaren might lose to Verstappen because whilst they seem so focused on each other and didn't choose between their drivers, not that they necessarily should now anyway, but it just shows that Verstappen has nothing to lose. And with how strong he is in Brazil and Las Vegas historically, and how strong McLaren aren't at those two venues, he could be leading the way heading into Qatar. And at that point, we've got two tracks that are pretty good for both teams and all three drivers. Historically, it's not been terrible hunting ground for them, so it's very interesting and seeing how a one-car team essentially might be able to beat a dominant two-car team.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what Red Bull can do there. And I think the dominance, the sort of one car, two car team thing is pressed home when you look at the points difference. And one has to imagine that the driver who's bought in just 7.23% of the team's points this season won't be
Doesn't
signed.
get any higher, does it?
If anything, it gets worse weekend by weekend, and it's not good for Tsunoda. But yeah, I think Verstappen had a great time of things and a really interesting race. And I think that his exceptional pace, a pass on Leclerc, was inevitable bar that VSC in the end.
Yeah, the other thing I'll say just to top it off was there were two amusing quotes heading into this weekend, one of which we'll get to later, but one of which was from Tsunoda when asked about what are the chances of you being here next year, and he just goes, I've just got to keep performing. You go, hang on, you've been performing? Have we missed this? I've not been familiar with that concept with you. That's an interesting comment. friend.
You've got to read between the lines.
Yeah, I chose to just go black and white with it and go, yeah, I don't think you're there next year.
Meanwhile, when it comes to performances, I don't know, there isn't really a link for Williams.
There's not, yeah. Talking of doing badly.
Yeah, there we go. That works. Albon beat Browning in FP1, P10, and P18, respectively. Albon qualified 17th, finished 12th. Sainz qualified 12th and would DNF. Technically, he was classified as, I think, 17th, but because he didn't actually take the checkered flag, in my book, that is a DNF.
Yeah,
And yeah, very much
that's
the
my
cause
rule.
of that VSC, very much his own fault as well. Got the car up onto the curb coming through the stadium section. There are high curbs through that bit. Car goes round on him. Backs it into the wall, mangles the rear toe links, limps it to a gap where the car then tries to catch fire. So we have to have fire marshals out onto the track. And also because he hasn't quite got it into the gap between the sort of wall overlaps, the car is still technically on a live circuit. It's being attended by marshals. That's why we have a VSC. It could have been done with waved yellows, but given that we'd nearly seen Lawson wipe out two marshals early on, I can understand why they might have been a bit cautious at that moment.
I can understand the caution, but at the same time, they were running across the track. These guys weren't. I think the whole thing was just poorly handled, but it was part of a whole poorly handled weekend by everyone there, really. It, from what you could see on the TV coverage and the commentary, it looked like if you were ever going to risk it, that would have been an acceptable time to, considering you've just done, what is it, 81 laps is the duration of that Grand Prix. You've done the majority of them, 71, 81, either way, a lot of laps, and no one else has done that yet. So the probability of it happening twice in such quick succession are slim. But yeah, I suppose on the one hand, you can understand the need for caution there, but still, didn't help Williams anyway, and they had a terrible weekend. The only thing I've really got to say is, you mentioned the high curbs. I have a fun tangent quickly for a recommendation for you for after this podcast. Go and watch the highlights from the Australian Supercars Championship from this weekend.
Circuit
Such fun.
Paradise. Yeah, I've been watching it, and the clips of the Camaras and the Mustangs literally skipping from curb to curb.
Airborne.
Obviously, if
Flying off,
yeah.
landing, accelerate, straight off, we
Yeah.
continue, lap after lap after lap. One small mistake and you are buggered. And none of them, but I think one of the cars on the opening lap where he locked a mirror, did it. They all survived this repeatedly and it was just impressive.
Obviously, if we're going to mention Aussie supercars, our thoughts go out to the four photographers who did get injured when a car absolutely nosedived into the barriers and shunted the entire thing backwards into them. But hopefully,
Drivers.
guys get better.
Somewhat
But
drivers.
yeah, keep an eye on Aussie supercars this season. It's looking absolutely fantastic. Also, go and watch the highlights package from Mount Panorama, the Bathurst 1000,
Such a
because
good race.
that's a good race. And also, it's peak Aussie because one of the fellas retired at the top end of the hill and took about
Kind of lost it, yeah.
seconds
The commentator
before
didn't
he
even
was
get the
over the
line
dam.
out
Yeah.
before it happened. And he was already. How long do you think before he get. Oh, no, he got a bit. Never
Got a
mind.
bit. There we go.
Continue.
Yeah. But anyway, yeah, it not a great weekend for Williams. Albon also had brake issues all weekend long that the team seemed unable to address. Hopefully, the 2 week gap before Brazil will give them a chance to go over some parts, refresh some things, overhaul a few bits and pieces, and get it gone from there.
If it rains in Brazil, you're gonna want brakes.
You're going to want brakes, you're going to want grip, you're going to want something, but we'll see. Albon didn't have a great time in Brazil last time either, so prayer circle for
Albon in Brazil generally doesn't go
him.
well.
No, spun out by Hamilton in what, 2020? So yeah,
21.
there go no, 2020, he was off the grid.
20? No, it can't have been 20. We weren't there in 20. 2019.
Might have been 2019 then. Yeah, no, was he already at Red Bull? Yeah, he was. Yes, yeah. Did he not go there in 2020?
No, it's COVID.
Hmm. Why do I? Yeah. Either way, he's been spun out by Hamilton there. Point aside, Albon, not a great weekend for him. Not a great weekend for Grove overall. With the battle behind them constantly shifting and different teams taking points from one another, there's no major threat to their positions. Speaking of teams behind them, Aston Martin. Alonso beat Crawford in FP1, P12 and P19 respectively. Big shocker there. Alonso would qualify 14th and would eventually DNF, and I've got some interesting bits on that. And Stroll qualified 19th and finished 14th. Yeah, I'm informed Stroll was in this race. I have no recollection of him doing anything apart from getting team orders past Alonso, at which point Alonso his power unit was already failing, so Alonso got bored and started just power sliding his way out of like turns 5 and 6. There's some great moments where you can see him, just hear him absolutely beansing the throttle and just sliding that thing around before pulling in and retiring in the pit lane.
Yeah, Alonso said after qualifying that the team didn't deserve points this weekend, and he was right. At least he wore a fun mask, just like his best buddy Russell did in FP1. I don't know if you
Just
saw that
like
as well, just before the
Bastard,
Grand
yeah.
Prix. So there was some fun to be had there, and yeah, more off-track amusement than on. And yeah, not much else to say on Aston Martin, really. It was just a bad weekend. And I think, go back to Williams slightly there, this is one of the times where that points buffer, like you say, really comes in handy because they can afford to have a bad weekend or two. And then when the next team behind you also has a bad weekend, that makes you feel a little better as well. You go, oh, well, at least they're not going to get us. So we've got to hope that, or we've got to rely on Kick Sauber then to have a really good weekend, which, spoilers, they didn't, to then maybe even bridge the gap slightly. And then you go, oh, Racing Bulls. And you go, oh, okay, cool. We're fine because they didn't have a good weekend either. And so by the time you go to Haas, you're not worried anymore because there's an even bigger buffer, even though you've done badly.
I will go back to Williams quickly because I have just found actually a bit of information on what else was going wrong with Carlos Sainz's weekend, which is to say a lot. So obviously contact in turn one, lap one, big melee, three or four cars side by side there, and that damaged the rim of the first set of tires, which were giving him massive vibrations. They lost all the sensors in the front tires, which meant that they then lost the ability to engage the pit lane limiter, which is why he then got the penalty for speeding in the pit lane, which for some reason
And
they
then the drive-through.
him drive through the pit lane. I'm like, but the speed limiter isn't working, it's just going to happen again. So yeah, that was interesting. The sensor was under reading, they were getting different results, so yeah, there were problems there, and yeah, car all over the place. So yeah, not a great weekend for Williams, but yeah, Aston Martin again, this weird thing.
It's been a while as well since we've seen a drive-through penalty in Formula
It's
One. So I saw the thing come up and I was like, oh. I mean, terrible for him, but yeah, we've not seen this in a while. That's refreshing in a weird F1 kind of way.
Let's see. When was our have I got like a list of drive-through penalties? Involvement duo most often front row together finished. I don't think I've got a list of drive-through penalties, which is unfortunate. But it'll be interesting to go and find that one out. Maybe I'll try and find that out for Brazil. Anyway, back into the sort of backfield battle, and Sauber Hülkenberg qualified 13th and would DNF, and Bortoleto would qualify 16th and finish P10. A good result for him, working his way up into the points.
Yeah, it's a really great thing, and as well as stealing it away from a Red Bull to boot is just going to be satisfying for him. We got to see him backing Hadjar as well. He passed him, obviously F2 rivals last season. You sort of forget about that until you up to the point you remember and you go, oh yeah, we've not really seen these two doing too much because we it's just so much has happened. So that must have been very satisfying for him. His home race up next. I get bad feelings because it's always the way, but I'm really hoping it's not. And it'd be such scenes if he could. I mean, I don't expect a podium or a win or anything like that. I'll happily take them, but I'm not expecting it.
A
But
top end.
I think if he gets points, I mean, it's
Yeah.
not going to matter. It's going to be a bit like Joe in China last year. Him just being there was enough for them to all lose their minds. It's going to be the same thing here, but. I think the one thing I'm most worried about is what if Colapinto takes Bortoleto out in Brazil? I wouldn't like to be, I mean, I never want to be Colapinto anyway, but I particularly wouldn't like to be on that occasion.
South
Really unfortunate for
America.
Hulk. Really unfortunate for Hulk off the back of points finish last time. So that was a real shame, and he was obviously disappointed with that. But again, they outdid themselves at the start of the season for us, so we weirdly give them a lot more credit than to have bad race weekends than we would have thought we would, so
Yeah,
it's
we can
okay.
cut them some slack at this point. I think they've really sort of overstretched, overpushed that chassis, and we're starting to see a few issues creeping in. Reliability hasn't reared its head that much this season, bar Lando's engine really going pop. And this is possibly the first sign that there might be trouble ahead for Ferrari power units. unclear. There was all manner of issues that Nico was suffering. It seemed to mostly be control surfaces and things. So it was there was everything from brakes to power unit to hydraulics, all sorts going wrong. So little surprise that he ended up retiring in the end. But yeah, as you said, Gabby, decent outing for him, picking his way through the field, jumped three places at the start as well. Really good sort of opening gambit, and then picked off Sainz fairly early on from there. So just followed through with really strong pace all weekend. So could have been a better outing for Sauber, but ultimately not the worst for them. When it comes to bad outings, Racing Bulls, Hadjar beat Iwasa in FP1, P11, and P17, respectively. And when it comes to the Grand Prix, Lawson qualified 15th and would DNF fairly early on, again, after contact in that first melee. Meanwhile, Hadjar qualified 8th and would finish 13th.
Yeah, qualifying solid enough. I mean, Hadjar keeps performing. Lawson, it was a shame. I don't know what happened with him in Q2. It looked like his issues were already starting there, really, because he went and nearly did a lap and then went in, and we just never saw him again. And then whatever it was, maybe didn't get fixed properly or wasn't able to be fixed entirely for the Grand Prix. And then the Grand Prix just also threw a bunch of stuff at him. And the damage to his car was obviously worse than we it would have thought, because it looked like it was just a bit of front wing damage. I would have thought, yeah, just go in, replace that, off you go. But no. And then Hadjar's strategy seemed to also be a bit non-existent, as he was just left to sink like a stone. Again, a little bit like Mercedes, the team has a decent history in Brazil, so maybe things will fare better for them there. But a weekend to forget otherwise.
Yeah, one to move on from if you're Racing Bulls. However, if you're Haas, one to live in the limelight for. Ocon beat Hirakawa in FP1, no surprises there, P17 through P16. When it comes to the Grand Prix, though, Esteban Ocon would qualify 11th start and would finish 9th, work his way into the points, very nice. Meanwhile, Ollie Bearman qualified 9th and would finish P4. And Behrmann has never run higher than 6th in a Grand Prix before this weekend. It's important to note
He's
that.
really setting himself up awkwardly for the following Grand Prix,
Yeah,
because he keeps doing
building a
better. I mean, you're
lot of
running out of
pressure.
stuff here.
Yeah,
I'm just saying, if he
multiple.
could get something in Brazil where Magnussen got pole, after that, DNF the rest of the season for all I care. You've peaked. It's fine.
Yeah.
You're sorted.
He's got himself a Ferrari seat for 2027. Yeah, multiple laps running in the podium positions on raw pace as well. It is worth noting that he'd sort of lucked into it, had cars pit out front of him. He was there and there on pace. His efforts were immense and he got everything from that car. Ocon did all right too, to be honest, but decent outing for Haas, who had a decent strategy on hand for the first time in a long time. And it seemed odd at first to put
They didn't
Behrmann.
just leave Ocon out there.
No,
They listened.
they did some thinking. They've obviously been listening to us. Thank you, Laura Muller. But yeah, it seemed odd at first to put Behrmann in for that second stop, but a rookie on more tyres in a battle for position on a very hot track with Verstappen steaming towards him, it was the sensible play ultimately. While it did take away that podium, it still gave Behrmann his strongest finish ever. So it's nice to think that he could have held off the Dutchman for P3, but it was a bit of an inevitability.
Was never going to happen.
No. Haas pulled off the stop nicely as well, and I think second fastest stop of the weekend. So Ollie kept the pressure on Piastri from that point. And in the end, he was annoyed about the VSC himself and said he had been charging his battery and ready to defend into turn one. Ultimately, the result on paper, I'd say, is a fair representation of his efforts, and his racecraft early in the race was stonking. That outdrag on Verstappen through the back half of the lap, where he sat on the edge of your seats going, Ollie, what are you doing? What are you doing? What are you doing? Watching him sort of scything his way past Hamilton and then Verstappen, you're going, what on earth is this kid up to? This is unreal.
Especially when you think back to last year with, what was it, Magnussen Stroll in the same part of the track, and it ended in disaster. You go, oh no. And you go, no, when we said watch last year's, that's not what we, no,
Watching
that's not
through
what we
sort of
meant.
slits in your fingers, sort of going, please don't do it, please don't do it. Yeah, his efforts catapulted him from 18th to 13th in the standings, netting Haas their best finish in a Grand Prix since Romain Grosjean at the 2018 Austrian Grand Prix, plus obviously Behrmann's best finish too.
I've got to say, him stealing third for the time that he did, and definitely for that immediate moment for me, was very reminiscent of Hamilton stealing positions away from Leclerc and Perez in Silverstone in 2022. It's this sort of, what are those two up there doing? Interesting. I'll keep an eye on that, and then, don't mind if I do. Thank you very much. I'll just, you two battle over there. I'm just going to, thank you very much, please, and thank you. And yeah, Ocon getting to points two means it was an unexpectedly great Grand Prix for Haas. They also a bit like Sauber. They've had one of those seasons where not a bad a season as obviously Sauber had last year, and Magnussen, Hulken, and DeBerman did solid stuff last year. But I think we weren't expecting an awful lot necessarily this year, especially with the focus we'd assume being on 26. But they've also kind of come out going, well, we'll go down swinging on this set of regulations. And Behrmann showing, yeah, he really is a, he's the real deal, I think. We've never been in doubt of that, but I think we didn't get to see what he truly capable of in Formula 2 last year because of Reno can't be in the regular. And so he was maybe our biggest question mark out of the lot. Because Antonelli, he was going to have this situation of some of his mistakes will be masked by the car because he's in such a better car. Whereas Behrmann in a Haas, you don't have as much space to hide in. And so when he gets these opportunities and he didn't kind of bat an eyelid at going, I'm going to fight Verstappen, is very, again, go back into Silverstone 22, it's very Mick Schumacher versus Verstappen, then going, am I seeing this correctly? And hang on, the Haas is beating him somewhere. We needed a bit of this, and it is a shame he didn't get on the podium, but I think it just shows that we do, with one obvious exception, have some really strong rookies this year.
Bear Boy
And
does
drivers that we might see
have.
for quite a while. It's not going to be a Joe situation or a you must not be named situation where we're going to see you for a year or two and then you disappear into some other series, if anything.
Or
You're
even
going
Mick
to be here
Schumacher.
for a while. Yeah. Again, circumstances, I'm still going to go on that one a little, I'll fight that one a bit more, but plenty of other contenders where we go, yeah, you're probably not going to do much and we won't necessarily see you again. Whereas Behrmann, Hadjar, Lawson are still put into that Bortoleto, definitely. And Antonelli, of course. You know, yeah, you're here for the long run. You're the next lot of Charles and George coming through, and Albon.
Yeah, to put it in tennis terms, this is sort of the arrival of Djokovic, Federer, Nadal, Murray, that sort of same time where they all come in and you go, oh, this is going to be a long series of
We're
years.
going to be putting on with them for a while, aren't we?
And I look forward to that. I think it's going to be really exciting seeing this sort of batch of rookies, given that this is the talent we're seeing them display. And we've seen one of them on the podium, two of them on the podium this season already, as it is. One of them very nearly on the podium, and Gabby, by far the most hampered by his car. Absolutely astonishing drive. So it's exciting times. I think Behrmann is again proving that he is this absolutely fascinating talent that I cannot wait to see more from him. Meanwhile, speaking of talent, or more accurately, a bit of a lack of it, certainly when it comes to designing a good racing car these days. Alpine, Colapinto beat Paul Aron in FP1, P9, and P15, respectively. In the Grand Prix, Pierre Gasly would qualify 18th and finish 15th. Meanwhile, Colapinto would qualify stone last and finish 16th. And all Bortoleto needs to do is bag two more points, and Alpine will have all three of their drivers from this season in the bottom places of the championship. Given that the French outfit are still pointless in Spa and Bortoleto is nipping at the points on a fairly regular basis, it's by no means out of the question. I think we could see Alpine get P19, P20, P21 in the driver's title this year, and I kind of look forward to them doing that.
Yeah, and to build off what I said after Austin, Colapinto could now finish P2 in Brazil and still potentially be last in the championship. It's getting to that point in time. And to go off what I was saying earlier, Yuki had a obviously not a great aging quote over the weekend. Neither did Colapinto, because prior to the weekend he said that history isn't written by cowards. He then proceeded to get lapped by Ollie Bearman in a Haas. So make of that what you will, ladies and gentlemen, listening.
Yeah, if you're getting lapped by a Haas a couple of years ago, that's a terrifying statement. But even now, it's
It's
still
still not much better this year, let's
not.
face it.
No, it's still not great. So there we are. That's Alpine, which finishes up our run through of the constructors and the race as a whole. We'll sum it up with our winners and spinners. I think it's fairly obvious who we're both picking for our winner this weekend. He may not have stood on the podium, but he has won a podium place in our hearts, Ollie Bearman. And spinners, I think we've both gone down the same line with this one. You've gone stewards, I've gone the marshalling team.
Yeah. Stewards, just because they're ultimately responsible for way more stuff in terms of quantity. You've gone for quality of poor decisions. I've gone for quantity of poor decisions, from signs, penalties, going, yeah, that doesn't seem like the smartest thing to do considering the issue that he has, to the 10-second penalty for Hamilton being just ridiculous and all the rest of it. I think while the we didn't talk too much about the turn one lack of penalties, how much that annoyed Russell, how much Verstappen didn't seem to care. Would have been interesting had he got a penalty, how much he would have then cared, and why he didn't seem to be too bothered about commenting on other people's drama because he just simply wasn't involved. I know that's partly just Max being Max, but at the same time, it's funny how when the shoe's on the other foot, suddenly it's all perfectly fine. But I still think when you have that much advantage, you saw how far Leclerc was ahead before he was having to go back, and then Verstappen just, he was ahead of Russell already, but then he was still, there was still more stuff there that you feel like if you're giving penalties for XYZ things over here, why are you not even looking at some other things? And it's again that wildly inconsistent consistency from the stewards that makes me want to just throttle them and get some proper people in there who at least give a better impression of knowing what they're doing, which is a segue for your part.
I should say also before I move into my bit on the legal side of you suggesting that you would like to throttle some of the stewards, that you mean in the cartoonish sense, like Homer Simpson throttling Bart,
Yes.
in
Yes.
one that doesn't actually level an accusative threat at living people. That's for your benefit, I make this statement. Meanwhile, mine is more with the marshalling team, because how the hell do you put marshals out onto an active corner when you know you've got a car coming through as well? And why don't you have a marshalling team come from the other side of the circuit onto the grass to collect the stuff to run back away without having to cross the active track? This isn't hard. Put in more marshalling posts, train them properly. They are by and large always volunteers, and they make racing weekends happen. Look after your marshals. Also, Pirelli, how was the soft tyre more long-lived than the medium this week?
That did make me scratch my head a couple of times. I'm going,
Oh,
how is that? Have you
come
just
on.
mislabeled them?
There's just so much that's going wrong with the Pirelli compounds towards the end of this season. And it's a
Bring back Michelin.
because bring back Michelin, bring back something, because the problem is we've made the tyres too hard
Hankook.
that they don't, please don't go for Hankook. Look at the mess they've made of Formula
I
Renault.
know.
The Linglongs, Windrunners, anything but Hankook. Like, there's just so many problems
Bridgestone,
with the tyres
bring
that
back tire wars.
There's just so many problems that Pirelli have brought in with making the tires sort of harder and harder and more long lasted, is we end up with these boring one-stop strategies. And then as soon as they do something weird, we end up with strategies that stop making sense, or like compound orders that don't make sense. And like, you're trying to engineer your way out of your own problem. Just make better tires for racing.
Get a Firestone.
Firestone, yeah, well, Firestone would be good because I don't know, we don't run at any circuits that overlap with IndyCar these days, so you won't have that
No,
fire
but I've just had that
advantage.
consistent advertising in my face for the entire IndyCar season that I've got to at least mention Firestone, because
Yeah.
otherwise their advertising is clearly not working.
Yeah. What's the special cactus compound they use?
Oh, I don't remember that at all because I've had better things to go into, but I just know that if you need something, you need a Firestone.
Go NASCAR spec. We're running Goodyears now. And all F1 cars must run the mandatory 5 glued lug nuts on the hub as well. If you want interesting pit stops, that's the way we do things. Anyway, we'll move to our predictions review. And only 1 point this weekend, which goes to Sabrina from our preview episode for correctly predicting a Charles Leclerc P2. Otherwise, no points for anyone. And Fantasy Formula One review for Mexico, Jaffa Cake Racing in P1. Go me, use my limitless ticket to bag the top five
You
drivers.
say go you used essentially a cheat code.
It's a cheat code that's given to you by the Fantasy League
Oh
set.
yeah, I know, but I'm not
It's a
necessarily going
perfectly
to be
legitimate
pumping my
thing.
fist in the air going, look what I've done. And go, I've kind of
I was
fucked.
just clever enough to use it on the
I've done
incident
what
kickoff.
Verstappen did and cut half the track off.
And I
Look at
didn't
me,
get
I mean something.
penalized for it. It's fine. I used top five drivers plus McLaren and Ferrari. Second place goes to Carlos Williams Siegen, and it's a tie for third place with Ellie Mays Can't Grow a Moustache and Marco Rios's Yuki the Rookie. On the curbs, coming 32nd time with EMT's Dog Dads with 130 points. Kiwi Burners scored.
Alonso, Hülkenberg, and whoever the other initial DNF was at Lawson, I
Liam,
think didn't help me. Yeah, that was not great. I'm going to have a look at that.
Worse still, though, Kiwi Burma scores three. Mercedes really doing the heavy lifting there to keep them in the positive scores. Overall, LeVictory still leads 3,618 points ahead of De Ticolas, 3,465 points, and Big Reach 3,411. Catherine's Curse remains relatively uncursed in fifth. On the Curbs drops to eighth. Cargo and Moustache is up to 14th, and My Mixing Pot is in 19th. There we go. That's all we have for this episode of the Undercut Podcast. We'll be back with a preview soon of the Brazilian Grand Prix. In the meantime, though, Timo, where can you be found?
This week, you can find me over on Instagram, t.albert.data on the post, where I will have an interview with Barbara Pereira. So, which I probably mispronounced that slightly, but there we go. Portuguese rally co-driver who is going to be going on and doing pretty good stuff. So, go and check them out.
Very nice. And if you'd like more from me in the meantime, you can, of course, find all of my writings in Classic Car Weekly. And of course, we have the Classic Car Weekly podcast, which comes out alongside each new issue every week. And as usual, I'm on the interwebs as at Jesse on Cars on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. So go and give me a follow there. And like I said, we'll be back in relatively short order-ish for a preview of the Brazilian Grand Prix.